when it's hot. Turn to the city. All right, here we go. Show 6. Wow,
the stairway to 6. We're here.
Stairway to 7.
Stairway to 6.
Stairway to 7. Gonna be hard to get there. Ballwood of the Berg. Here we are again on the 18th of October. Time is just flying by in this whole year, the year of 2019. The semester's flying by.
We're going to be at Thanksgiving break before you know it.
Turkey Bowl's coming up soon. I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Goldbash.
And as I said, this is Baldwin and the Berg. We are just rolling. We are rolling through.
Except we've hit that point in the year where people are coming down sick. I'm sitting between two sick guys right now.
Yeah, trying to battle off some colds. And, you know, you could probably tell in our voices, you know, there's just not the same influences. Goldbash just coughed.
Sorry, I had to bring it up, even though you guys probably didn't want to talk about it.
No, we'll be all right. We're, you know, sometimes it takes us a little week to get through it. I wasn't on the baseball show on Monday trying to rest up, but, you know, here we are. Speaking of resting up, the Steelers, they get a bye week.
What are we going to do? This is like the main part of our show.
What are we going to talk about with the Steelers? Well, what we can do is we could talk about their win against the San Diego / LA Chargers, whatever you want to refer to them as. In the soccer stadium, Steelers going to play the Chargers in a road game.
You mean home game?
I don't know. Looked like about 80% Steelers fans to me.
Yeah.
And they also played Renegade in the second half.
They try to Rick Rule them, but come on. Even if you play Renegade and then do that, it's still something you shouldn't do. Chargers players are so upset at that.
Yeah,
did you see Melvin Gordon?
Melvin Gordon was not happy. Players for the Chargers were demanding whoever that was to be fired. They were like, we don't get fans anyway. Now you're encouraging the road fans that are already here to be even more loud by playing their anthem. So let's start right there. What were you guys' assessments of the game versus the Chargers? Devlin Hodges was pretty good. He did throw a pick late in the game.
But again, it was kind of,
you know, trying to force the ball downfield, maybe doing a little too much. But other than that,
he kept.
I mean, you got to give.
It was almost like a carbon copy of how they had Rudolph play against the Bengals.
Yeah,
mostly check downs, let him throw the ball deep, maybe once or twice. It was probably a carbon copy of what they ran against the Bengals.
You got to admit the Steelers did play, you know, pretty exceptional, especially defensively. Again, I love touching on this defense because they keep showing up. I think. You know, at least in the past few weeks, they've been showing up. I know, like, for the Bengals, they're not that good offensively, especially with their offensive line. But, I mean, you're coming up against
this was a high-powered offense last
year.
Yeah,
a guy like Phillip Rivers with a receiver like Keenan Allen and then Melvin Gordon. I know he's just starting to play again. But you hold their rushing attack to 32 yards with Melvin Gordon and Eckler. That's pretty impressive up front. But the biggest thing about that, you lose a guy like Stephon Tuitt, who is – your forefront of that defensive line. That's a huge loss for the Steelers there. But, I mean, they have Cam Hayward still, Javon Hargrave. You have a guy like Tyson Alualu who should, you know, step up. He didn't play too bad. So, hopefully there's guys that were placed. Dan McCullers maybe will come in. Maybe they'll get some decent production out of the guys that are going to step up. But defensively, they played exceptional. Devin Bush, another outstanding game. He's just so quick. He flies around the field. Thanks, Goldbash. He flies around the field. He's been so fun to watch this year. I mean, 9-yard fumble recovery for a touchdown and interception as well. He's shown that he can do just about anything.
Yeah, so back to Tuitt. He is now on IR for more than likely it'll be the rest of the season, out for the rest of the year with a torn pec. That is what's feared of the Steelers, and it was confirmed. So, like you said, Alualu, he got a hand up on the Devin Bush interception that was tipped and deflected to Bush. I want to touch on Bush. I think he's been great. He was Defensive Player of the Week in the AFC for his efforts against the Chargers. He was great. He was what the Steelers have been hoping that they would get from the middle linebacker position ever since Shazier has been gone.
It feels nice having like a solid middle linebacker that can make plays like this.
We haven't
had this in a couple
fumble
years.
Recovery for a touchdown, that interception, 4 tackles. He's got 52 total tackles on the season. Devin Bush has been steady. Has there been lapses in coverage that he's had? Yes.
Yeah, but he's a rookie.
Also,
there's going to be lapses.
Also,
coverage.
There's been plenty of times I noticed in the Chargers game he missed a lot of tackles.
Yeah.
There was some that were right in front of him that just like the guy just slipped him that he should have made that tackle. So, but those are things to work on. Those are things to fix. But Devin Bush, he's lightning quick. he's going to make your big-time plays at linebacker. So he's just been extremely fun to watch and, you know, came up big versus the Chargers.
Yeah, he's ranked 10th in the league in total tackles. I think Bush is – he's been steady. Now, has he been there on passing downs? Covering tight ends has been a struggle when he has to do it. That's why they brought in Mark Barron to be able to cover tight ends.
And tight end-wise, Hunter Henry scored the 2 touchdowns for the Chargers, so they're obviously they weren't able to cover them, at least late in the game. They did a good job shutting them down and through the first 3 quarters.
Steelers have just struggled. Again, it doesn't matter what year it seems to be. Steelers just struggle against tight ends. I mean, Seattle, they had I think it was Will Disley scored 2 touchdowns. Look at, you know, New England doesn't really have any tight ends.
When they had Gronk.
When they had Gronk, they just fed him the ball.
They kept giving Gronk the ball against us, except that game at home when we shut them down. It was Joe Hayden's key interception on the sideline with about 5 minutes to go. But it's the tight ends. Who are you going to have to stop them? I think Mark Barron is a key guy in that. But, you know, watching Hunter Henry go off like he did, and, you know, coming back from injury, too, with not many reps under his belt, it just shows that the Steeler defense is, you know, good at times. But, you know, can you cover tight ends? Can you do the necessary things needed in the time being? Like, 17 unanswered points in the fourth quarter.
But you got to admit, though, through 3 quarters, shutting them out for a guy like Phillip Rivers and has the target like Hunter Henry or Keenan Allen, Mike Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was getting sketchy there late in the game, but they held him. And I think the Steelers D once again stepped up to, you know, heights that they hadn't reached yet this year until like the fourth quarter, until they started letting up points where, I mean, Duck Hodges couldn't get the offense rolling in the third, and the run game again really wasn't there.
Benny Snell football.
Yeah, I know you want to touch on the run game a little bit with Snell and Connor.
Yeah, Benny Snell. Now, James Connor got a bunch of receptions. I got to admit that.
100 purpose yards.
Again, little dump-off plays, you know.
Yeah, Connor had 7 catches for 78 yards and a touchdown with the, you know, rookie quarterback, second-year quarterback Rudolph and Hodges. They're going to be a bunch of checkdowns, opportunities for the running backs out of the backfield to make plays. Benny Snell, though, 17 carries for 75 yards, average of 4.5, pretty good. Only had a long of 20 yards. James Conner's long of 12. He did score a couple touchdowns, though.
Plunge.
16 carries, 41 yards. Only a 2.6 average, but I like what I saw from Benny Snell. I think the blocking was there for him. I don't really think that he's the type of guy that's going to
create his own space.
No, I think he's a guy that the hole is there, he will see it, he will hit it, and he will run. But if the hole is not there, he will dive into the back of an offensive lineman and just hope that the hole emerges. And that's the thing that, you know, kind of worries me about it. Now, his running style at Kentucky is different than the running style that they want him to do with the Steelers. And it's an adjustment period, and I think we saw that in the first couple weeks, even though he really had limited reps. But I think this past game against the Chargers, he was able to, you know, show the Steelers why they drafted him, show that he's worthy of carrying the ball. I mean, pretty good average. He has some nice runs. I like what Snell did, and, you know, with Samuel's out for a couple more weeks, it's going to be interesting to see what he can do in the future.
I also, you know, talking about the run game that, you know, was there at times with Benny Snell, the receiving game, once again, other than James Conner, not really there out of your top receivers. Not a lot of production. Juju was targeted 4 times, only made 1 reception for 7 yards. I know that's, you know, been a thing where they haven't targeted him a whole lot, but he's getting, I don't know, there needs to be more production from him and more of a connection between Rudolph and Hodges.
Hey, they threw the ball to Dante Moncrief.
You took that from me. I was going to say, Dante Moncrief caught a football, and he caught a football, 1 reception for 11 yards. He's back.
He had 2.
All that money we gave him, worth it. He got a catch now.
2 targets.
There just needs to be way more production. Again, when Rudolph comes back, if that's against the Dolphins or whenever that is, it probably will be against the Dolphins with him clearing concussion protocol. They need to find a better connection between the receivers and Rudolph. They just have to, because, again, the running game's not been there a whole lot this year. And if they're going to be successful in offense, they need to be able to hit their guys like Juju and Deontay Johnson and guys like Vance McDonald and Nick Vinette.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think, though, that the defense put them in such a great position early on that, you know,
it was easy for them to score.
Run the ball, little check down plays, just, you know, slow the offense down. Don't have to, you know, make a big play happen. Just march methodically down the field any way you can.
Yeah,
Devlin Hodges had 132 yards passing, touchdown and a pick, as we mentioned. 3 rushes for 8 yards. He really was a game manager, really, but that's okay. That's what the Steelers asked him to do. I think, you know, for the role that Hodges was given, being thrown in against a good team on Sunday Night Football, you know, primetime game, I think he really, you know, stayed up to the task. I think he was good. I think he played – I don't think he played better than the Steelers would have hoped, but I think he played exactly like the Steelers, you know.
Yeah, he gave
were thinking that
he didn't blow anybody away. He got the job done.
Yeah, he gave them the chance to win.
And the
Steelers defense held their own, and you know they won the game.
That's the way that Hodges had to play. The Steelers were going to win the game. That's what happened.
I mean, once again, early defense led to them getting out to an early start. I mean, Devin Bush just 5 minutes into the game with that fumble recovery returned. I mean, you saw in the 49ers game where they had, 4 turnovers in the first quarter or something like that. Early defense has been a key part of this team the past couple weeks. But the one thing is just when it's coming into these games, you know, down the remainder of the season, whether it's the Ravens or the Browns or whatnot, they need more offensive production. It's plain and simple. They need to find a way to get it done because their defense is playing well at times but not – overall, they're still letting up points, so they just need to figure it out. They need to get all 3 phases of the game clicking: special teams, defense, and offense. And they're gonna be honestly a dangerous team. I know they're sitting at 2-4, still looking outside in to get back to the top of the division, but there's still chances. They have the Miami Dolphins next.
Yeah, so. I know we mentioned it earlier on earlier shows, but Dolphins at home on primetime. A Monday Night Football game with Mason Rudolph back at quarterback, confirmed by Tomlin, who we'll hear from soon. The Colts at home against Jacoby Brissett. Now, I know that they're pretty good this year, 3-2, defying some expectations with Luck being out. The struggling Rams at home, 4:30 game on Fox. At the Browns on Thursday night against, Browns are kind of struggling.
Yeah, if the Steelers come back in this division – they have to beat the Browns twice.
Yes.
I just think they have to.
So then at the Bungles, the Browns again at home, and then it's at the Cardinals, home against the Bills, which could be a test, at the Jets, who now have my guy Sam Darnold back, and then a game that could determine the division, maybe, what the Steelers hope happens in these somewhat easy games, you can call them, at the Ravens.
If you really look at that, it's 1, 2, 3, possibly 3 or 4 just games that you could that you should win.
Winnable games, a lot of winnable games.
If you want to count both Browns games, that's at least six possible games where you could come out and win these games, and then you could be okay with losing them. But then we'd be like, what, 9, 10?
I mean, there's
9 and 7.
Other than the, the Bills and the
Ravens.
And the Ravens, there's no one sitting first or second in the division. Out of all those teams, I'm pretty sure. I mean,
maybe the
Browns, but Jets, they're what, third, fourth, third. They're third. The Rams are sitting third.
Yeah, Jets are 1-4. Rams are currently 3-3. They're third behind the undefeated San Francisco.
Yeah, they are third.
And five and one
Seattle.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
So when looking at Baltimore's schedule, though, comparing it. They got to go to Seattle this week. Then they got their bye preparing for New England at home on Sunday Night Football, which is going to be a very interesting game. Then at the Bengals, they host the Houston Texans. They got to go to the Rams on Monday Night Football. Then they host San Francisco. Then they're in Buffalo. They play the Jets on a Thursday night game at home. Then it's at the Browns, and they host the Steelers.
I mean, they have
That schedule sounds infinitely harder.
Yeah, they have a ton of hard games. Again, if the Steelers jump on their opportunities when they need to and don't lose games to the Dolphins or the Jets or the Cardinals like they did last year with the Raiders, then they could easily find themselves back up there fighting for this division.
Well, you look at some games that Seattle could be a loss. New England, even though it's at home, prime time, could be a loss. Houston's pretty good this year. They got protection from Deshaun Watson, could be a loss. San Francisco as well, even though games are at home, could be a loss. At the Rams, At the Browns, they got beat by the they got smacked by the Browns 40-25 at home. What if they go to Cleveland?
If this division just beats each other up and the Steelers though take care of people like the Browns and the Ravens, and there's really no reason. I know they're sitting at 2-4, but there's still a lot of season left.
When you break it down, Steelers had their hard games first. Yeah. New England, San Francisco, Seattle. They'll play the Rams later. But
I mean, the Ravens started with the Dolphins and the Cardinals. Ravens, we go into this stretch with the Dolphins and the Cardinals.
Ravens had the Dolphins where they destroyed them on the road. The Cardinals at home were – it was – the Cardinals were coming back in that game. Then they went to the Chiefs and lost. Lost at home to the Browns, losing two in a row before they bounced back against the Steelers. And then defeating the Bengals at home last week, 23-17. Same score as the Cardinal game. So, when you look at it, I think we judge this Baltimore team really early by their shellacking of the Dolphins, who are tanking, going for two to attempt to win the game, against Washington.
Dropping the ball. And again, back to the Steelers-Ravens game. If you think about it, the Steelers were probably going to win that game if Rudolph stayed in. Just with the what happened and the chaos that ensued after the Rudolph, you know, getting hurt, throwing in Devlin Hodges. And then just mental lapses by the Steelers, you know, Juju fumbling and then Devlin Hodges not jumping on the ball. There was a lot of mistakes made in that game that are fixable mistakes. And when you get maybe a guy back like Rudolph and he gets comfortable again, I don't know if there's going to have to be a period that he has to get comfortable, but you have the Dolphins. I mean, against the Dolphins, please just let him sling the ball. Come on, what do you have to lose? I mean, you got to start getting your offense going, and you need to be able to start running the ball, and you need to start getting targets to your main receivers where they're going to get that connection, where they're going to get that chemistry. Because even Rudolph isn't even hitting Washington when he's playing. James Washington, his prime target back in college.
He was out with a shoulder injury last week, even though, you know, Washington didn't play. Rudolph didn't play, so it's going to be interesting to see, battling back, what will happen with James Washington and if that chemistry will be able to, you know, come back with Mason Rudolph. So now we'll take some time right now and we'll be able to hear what the coach thinks, Mike Tomlin, as we listen in live to what we think, not live, but listen in when Tomlin was live.
The Tomlin audio.
We don't have an injury report. We don't have an official injury report because we are on a bye. We know Mason Rudolph will play, but this is what Tomlin had to say.
I just wanted to address a couple of injury-related things, give you guys some updates. First of all, on some of the guys that have been out, some are progressing nicely. Rosie Nix is progressing nicely. We'll see if he'll be available for some work next week. And again, that work will be our guide in terms of game availability. Same could be said for James Washington and Mark Barron, Steve Nelson. Less so with Jalen, but obviously he's coming off of a surgery. Although he's progressing nicely, he's probably not a candidate in the ways that the other guys will be going into next week. Some of the guys that sustained injury in game that have been evaluated, their practice availability may be limited at the early portions of the week. They'll have an opportunity to work through it, improve their overall readiness. Those guys being James Conner, Joe Hayden, and T.J. Watt. Conner with his quad, Joe Hayden with his groin, T.J. Watt with his abdomen. Expect both of those guys to prove their readiness throughout the course of the week and get prepared to play in our next game. We obviously placed Stephon Tuitt on IR. He has a torn pec and is scheduled for surgery. I think that surgery is as soon as today. Don't have specifics there. We reacquired L.T. Walton. There's a guy that we have familiarity with. Guys have been a part of our program, guys that understands the culture here, and took a look at him, and he's physically ready to go, so we'll add him to the mix. Obviously, it won't be him in replace of Stephon Tuitt. There'll be a lot of guys, not only in the D-line room, but maybe also in the outside linebacker room. We got to acknowledge Stephon was playing really good football, particularly as it pertains to the rush, and the rush has been a catalyst for a lot of positive things for us. So we have to keep it hot, and so whatever that entails in terms of utilization of people and combinations of people, we're willing to do. Mason Rudolph is progressing nicely. Technically, he's still in the concussion protocol, but really there's no extreme urgency in terms of getting him out of the protocol because we don't work again until Monday. He's been fully cleared to participate in the things that we've been doing. He would have been a full participant had we choose to work out today. So it's probably semantics or whatever in terms of him getting clearance. But when he does, we'll inform you and we won't speculate any further than what I just did. Questions?
Mike, how would you expect, I know you mentioned about players, Isaiah Butts, where is he? Is he able to, you feel he's ready to maybe?
All right, that's a little bit of Tomlin speaking to the media, basically recapping what we said, saying about the likes of LT Walton coming back to the team with Stephon Tuitt out with his torn pec. Saying guys like James Washington, Mark Barron, evaluate them throughout the week, see if they can come back and contribute for this team coming up against the Miami Dolphins at home, Monday Night Football after the bye. Going to be an interesting game against a team that fought out
this isn't very good.
Struggling, just absolutely can't do anything on offense. This doesn't have the pieces on offense or really even has the pieces on defense this season. So should be an interesting game for the Steelers to get Mason Rudolph back. Get healthy. Don't overlook the Dolphins, obviously, but kind of use it as a game where, you know, play some younger guys, play some guys that usually, you know, don't see much time to be able to keep some fresh legs, keep some guys going, try to keep James Conner healthy and see a little bit of Benny Snell and a bunch of younger guys and hopefully get the Rudolph and Washington connection going. So we'll move on to the college part of the show. College football, Pitt, Penn State, WVU. Nate, take us away.
It's starting to get super exciting in college football. Of course, mid-October, getting to games that really, really matter. You know, teams fighting to get into their conference championship games. And, you know, starting with Pitt, they're trying to clinch the Coastal again. They take on Syracuse tonight at the Carrier Dome. Pitt's coming off a bye here. They take on a Syracuse team that last week lost to NC State 16-10, and Syracuse gave up 8 sacks. Tommy DeVito, their sophomore quarterback, sacked 8 times. Pitt is tied 2nd in the FBS with sacks, with 27 on the season. That's tied with Penn State, 2nd in the FBS. So Syracuse is going to have their hands full when it comes to the Pitt rush defense. Tommy DeVito, he's going to have to make a lot of quick plays to get the ball out of his hand, or he'll be on the ground with Jalen Twyman and guys like Habakkuk Baldonado getting in there, Patrick Jones, all those guys. Patrick Jones had a big game against Duke 2 weeks ago. But Pitt, with Syracuse's passing game, it'll be tough for Pitt because Tommy DeVito has been pretty good so far this year. He's thrown for 1,500-plus yards, 12 touchdowns, only five interceptions. They have a decent running game with Mo Neal as their top rusher, but Tommy DeVito's main target at wide receiver, Tristan Jackson, one of the top receivers right now in the ACC. He's just closing in on 500 receiving yards, 6 touchdowns. He's going to be a guy for them to that the Pitt's going to have to keep an eye on, whether they throw Dane Jackson on him or whoever they want. But this is going to be an interesting game. I believe Pitt's favored by 3.5 right now. Pitt's defense, though, is the key to the rest of the season. They play a lot of inferior teams coming up below them in the standings. This game is obviously going to be a big one before they come home to play Miami again. So this game, I think, sets the tone for the rest of the season. If they can come off this bye, you know, fix all their penalties they took against Duke, if they can fix that, that'll be a big bonus. So they take on Syracuse tonight at the Carrier Dome. The next game, biggest game of the weekend, Penn State at home, number 7 against number 16, the Michigan Wolverines. This is a college game day game, ABC, 7:30 tomorrow night. It's going to be one heck of a game. There's a ton to talk about. I mean, Michigan, you know, once again, a team that a lot of people think should be, you know, better than they are, but they continue to show that, like, they're struggling a lot this season. They're 5-1. Yeah, 5 wins, but I look at they lost to Wisconsin 35-14, which Wisconsin's just a good team, and they have a very good defense. I'll touch on them later.
They'll make any offense look irrelevant.
I mean, the Big Ten's pretty tough with the top teams they have over there. A lot of teams can compete up there. But Michigan, they played Illinois last week. Illinois, you know, I mean, they haven't been good at all. I mean, ever really. They went into the fourth quarter. Illinois scored 25 unanswered points to make it 28-25. But then Michigan distanced themselves a little bit, making it 42-25 by the end of the ball game. But Michigan has had its lapses, and against a Penn State team, I don't know if you can do that, because Penn State continuing to show why they're a top 10 team, top 5 team. They could really easily be in the top 5 conversation. They're second again, mentioned FBS in sacks with 27. They're fourth in the FBS in yards allowed at 259.7 yards. And second in the FBS with points allowed at 8.2. Their score differential, 111-19. Only given up 19 points so far this season. That's insane. So
Penn State wins, they could be a top 5 team.
Yeah.
It really could be.
I mean, this is a big game, and left in the season, they have their tough opponents. They have Minnesota, who's been a surprise in the Big Ten, and they have Ohio State later in the season. But
Ohio State's going to be the real test to see whether they make it in to be a top
if
four
they
team.
If they easily handle Michigan, then I think they might beat Ohio State. It all depends on this game. Michigan, typically known for their tougher defense, they have two pretty good cornerbacks back there in Ambry Thomas and LeVert Hill, both two interceptions for the Wolverines so far this year. So that's going to be tough for them. Again, Penn State defense, just one of the toughest in the nation. You know, your DN, Yuter Gross-Matos, 5.5 sacks. Shaka Tony, 5.5 sacks. These guys are everywhere. Mika Parsons, their top guy on the defensive core. He leads the team with 31 tackles. Again, he led the team last year. He's going to be a key piece to Penn State, you know, making noise in this game. It's a whiteout up in Penn State.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Probably a whiteout with a primetime game.
Shout out my boy Ross. Goes to Penn State. He's probably going to be at that game. Better go crazy, my guy.
That place, honestly, arguably could be the best atmosphere in college football. There's no doubt about it. They have such an amazing
Do you think Michigan's up there? I mean, they have a pretty solid team.
They definitely
have crazy fans up there.
Yeah, but Penn State, just the way they handle their atmosphere with the whiteouts and the stripeouts and – you know, the noise that's there.
It's deafening. And when someone's trying to listen to your plays,
if you look at their stadium also, compared to the bowl typical stadiums like Notre Dame and Michigan, they have like an upper deck which funnels in the noise, so it's louder down on the field. It keeps the noise in a little bit and funnels it towards the field from their student section and whatnot. So that's going to be a crazy atmosphere. And finally, for Penn State, they're getting, you know, a top number one true running back in Noah Kane, a freshman. He the last two games he rushed for over 100 yards, so he's going to be their guy to take care of the ball, take most of the carries with other guys backing him up like Ricky Slade and Devin Ford. Sean Clifford once again showing his stuff last game. He only threw for 117 yards against an Iowa team, number 17, and they took care of them. So Penn State, but my guy that I wanted to touch on to watch in this game versus Michigan, Pat Freiermuth, third tight end for Penn State. He's been a guy over the middle that has been a reliable target all year long for Penn State. And if Clifford can hit him, you know, he's a guy like Mike Gesicki, former Penn State player, that, you know, once he gets the ball in his hands, he can
run.
Get a good chunk of yards. Yeah, he can run. He's very
like a George Kittle. Like he's good after the catch.
Yeah, he's a very reliable receiver, especially when it comes to the end zone. He does have only 3 touchdowns, but he's been a top target for Clifford all year. KJ Hamler, again, their top receiver over there for the Nittany Lions, 455 yards this season, 5 touchdowns. They have just so many different threats when it comes to offense and defense that, you know, I don't see why, you know, if they win this game, why they're not going to be in a top 5 conversation. So this is going to be a big game, college game day. So
a game everybody should be watching.
Yeah. Tough game in the
Big
Ten.
Top game of the night.
And then last game I wanted to touch on, like we typically do, West Virginia. They take on a top 5 team in Oklahoma.
Lincoln Riley's boys.
They're 6-0, coming off a big win against Texas.
Red River.
Jalen Hurts, 235 yards, 3 touchdowns. Also rushed for 131 and a touchdown.
CeeDee Lamb also with 3 touchdowns.
CeeDee Lamb. I wanted to touch on him. CeeDee Lamb, I love his play. He's an explosive receiver. They threw I believe they ran a flea flicker. Tossed it back to Hurts. CeeDee Lamb was open, you know, after sort of a wheel route, gets the ball, goes into a coverage of like four guys, runs into like right into four guys, makes them all miss, hits the end zone, touchdown. He finished 171 yards, three touchdowns against Texas.
I'm pretty sure he's the first Oklahoma receiver to have three touchdowns in the Red River
rivalry. Yeah, he's their big guy down there in Oklahoma for the Sooners. And West Virginia just not getting it going once again. They struggle week in and week out, you know, especially with their running game. They relied on two other guys, you know, last game. They try to rely on Lorenzo Dorr and Leedy Brown, both fumbled against Iowa State. I mean, West Virginia was off to a hot start, too. They had a pick to start the game, pick six to start the game. Iowa State, you know, handled them easily the rest of the game. They ran a lot of, you know, play action and QB options and stuff like that. And West Virginia defense just couldn't handle them. Again, West Virginia, 41 rushing yards. No rushing attack for West Virginia whatsoever in this game. And versus Oklahoma, God knows what's going to happen. You know, they might not even top 30 yards.
Yeah, I just want to mention with Lincoln Riley, this guy is phenomenal. I think we all know it, but he turns any quarterback into a Heisman candidate. He develops wide receivers, he develops every single offensive player.
He's an offensive mastermind. It's incredible.
He's insane. And
now, do you think he's going to, how long do you think he really will stay in college football or even in Oklahoma?
Maybe a year. The NFL is going to be knocking and they're going to be offering.
They were knocking last year, I'm pretty sure.
They're going to be offering the big bucks and someone's going to want to get him. I mean, look at the teams who could have openings like
Washington,
Dallas.
Washington.
Well, maybe. Look at Dallas could be compelling for him. I know.
He gets the big team. He gets a quarterback that's often frequently talked about as being. Hasn't really reached his full potential yet. I mean,
the Steelers. Hey, Steelers trade Mike Tomlin to the Redskins. Steelers.
Hey, dude, it could work out. I mean, not saying, not ruling it out.
Tomlin's not getting traded. But
Jalen Hurts, though, it just amazes me. He's a mobile quarterback, but honestly,
he's a big dude.
So far this season, you know, it seemed like he was throwing the ball a lot more. 17 touchdowns on the year, 1,700 passing yards, but he leads Oklahoma in rushing with 630 yards and eight touchdowns. I didn't realize that. Those were his stats rushing wise. Like, he, again, a guy that I didn't think was as mobile. I know he's a mobile quarterback, but he's really.
No, he's built like Derrick Henry.
He at Alabama used to be Jalen Hurts,
the runner.
Running back playing quarterback, maybe. He did not throw at Alabama.
We were, because I don't think Saban really let him throw.
No, they really didn't open the playbook for him. And then he gets Lincoln Riley, and oh, well, he's a Heisman candidate.
They're like, oh, hey, look, maybe this dude can be something, but. I don't think he's going to be – I don't know if he'll be the best NFL quarterback. I mean, again, mobile quarterbacks don't really last that long. I mean, I know it's a starting trend, but, like, pure mobile quarterbacks don't last that long in the NFL anymore. I mean, not quite sure how he'll do in the NFL, but he really has. He's having a stellar season so far.
One last thing before – did you want to say something, Austin?
Well, I just think that Lincoln Riley has made Jalen Hurts from – backup guy at Alabama that would not make the league to possibly getting drafted. And it's just a matter of where he will be drafted. And I think that's credit to Lincoln Riley.
Do you have any personal opinion? Where do you think he could possibly be drafted?
Maybe third or fourth. But usually a quarterback from that range drop to the fifth. Depends on the rest of his progression throughout the rest of the year and how NFL scouts see him, how he does at the combines, pro days, stuff like that. But I'd probably say third or fourth.
So with this game, Oklahoma, I think, really handles West Virginia easily. I mean, I don't think there's much fight.
Oh,
one last person I wanted to touch on defensively for Oklahoma. That's going to be big. And honestly, I could make comparisons. You can make comparisons to Devin Bush with this guy. Kenneth Murray, their one linebacker, leads the team in tackles with 42, has 2.5 sacks. He had a big game last week versus Texas. He actually recorded his 2.5 sacks against them, I believe. I might be wrong there, but he is very quick. He covers a lot of field quickly. They threw one play. Ellinger threw it out to the flat. Kenneth Murray was getting ready to go into to sack the quarterback, and he was over there in a hurry to tackle the receiver just like that, just like Devin Bush, how he can cover the field a lot. Kenneth Murray is going to have a field day against West Virginia, no matter who's that quarterback, no matter how the game's going. The quarterback situation for the Mountaineers, thrown up in the air between the two juniors, Austin Kendall and Jack Allison. Right now, Jack Allison started against Iowa State and went 18 for 24, one touchdown, one interception. So it's going to be toss-up, see who plays. I guess they want to go with Allison for right now just because Kendall hasn't proven himself so far this year, and they want a little bit of spark. So to end on that, but now I want to look at, you know, talking about the college football, the poll right now, and talking about the teams that are there and, you know, do they deserve to be there? What teams are going to move up and down? I want to look at the top seven. Bama's at number one, 6-0. Their one big win, 24 against 24 Texas A&M early in the year, 47-28. They still have LSU, who's ranked right behind them, and Auburn later down the year in the Iron Bowl. At number two is the LSU Tigers, 6-0.
Joe Burrow is absolutely – I just wanted to talk about him.
Yeah.
Talk about him. He is absolutely – he's upped his draft status with his performance because no one thought he could throw the ball like he could. And this is a whole new style of
25,
LSU.
25 touchdowns for him, yeah.
It's a whole new style because LSU, you know the good old – the LSU teams, they always had solid defensive players, and then they would pound the ball.
Yeah, they would pound
throat.
The ball with the guys
this
like
is,
Leonard
this,
Fournette.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette and all those guys. But this is an aerial offense that no one's really seen from LSU, and then it's starting to pay off because, again, they're 6-0, and they're second in the country.
The top seven teams in the AP Top 25 are all 6-0 as they go. Alabama, LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, as Nate mentioned, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Penn State.
Thank you. I was going to finish that, but thank you.
But do you think if Wisconsin wins out, do you think they become a top four team?
Do you think
they could squeeze
they're,
in?
They're definitely going to end up in the Big Ten championship game because the Big Ten West just isn't very tough. So they're definitely going to end up having play another game. If they win that game, yes, they're a top four team. If they lose, it'll probably be to the hands of Ohio State or Penn State, depending on who's there. So whoever wins that Big Ten championship will obviously be
we'll make the
top
playoffs.
Four team. The one team that will probably end up undefeated, but if they lose, they're done, Clemson. They haven't shown a lot of, you know, promise so far this season. You know, hasn't played many tough teams. They almost lost to North Carolina, a very inferior team to them. The only tough team maybe would be Wake Forest left. They're 5-1. Wake Forest has a very good passing offense so far this year. Sage Surratt actually has entered into the Heisman candidacy talks. They have also South Carolina, who just upset number three Georgia at the end of the season for Clemson. So if they lose one game, they're done.
They play Wofford at home too.
Yeah, LSU, Bama, I think they're the teams to beat. That's going to be a great game when they face off against each other in, I believe, 2 weeks. And then Ohio State just has so many good pieces. Justin Fields has come in and played pretty well for them. J.K. Dobbins with the rushing attack, over 820 yards. He's been spectacular. And then Chase Young has been talked about and as a Heisman candidate as well. He's played well for the Buckeyes, 21 total tackles, 8.5 sacks for this guy. You know, I think he's third in the nation in that category. So there's a lot of tough teams. Again, Oklahoma, they don't have a lot of tough teams left, but they obviously just beat Texas. They have Baylor left in the season.
They're probably going to end up facing Texas in the final in their final game.
But then Wisconsin and Penn State obviously hold their own fates in their hands because for Wisconsin, they have Ohio State left, they have 23 Iowa left, and they have 20 Minnesota. Two out of those three games, they probably should win. It's just how they've been playing. They have one of the best defenses in the nation. They're first in pass.
And they have a Heisman candidate in Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, they're first in pass and rush defense. And they have a Heisman candidate in Jonathan Taylor. He's been an unbelievable rusher so far this year.
I didn't hear much about him going into this year, but watching that Michigan game, he ran all over them.
Yeah,
he did.
I mean, Wisconsin is another team that's just been known for producing pretty good running backs. Melvin Gordon, he holds, I believe, the FBS record and for rushing yards in a game.
We're gonna have Monte Ball.
So, didn't Abdullah break it? I thought he might have broke it. I don't know.
Yeah, but they've had.
But again, he was from Wisconsin, wasn't he?
They've had their fair share of
Abdullah.
They've had their fair share of, you know, talented running backs. So my question to you guys is, it's halfway point in the season, and those are your, you know, top seven who are competing. At the end of the season, who's your top four playoff teams?
Top four playoff teams. All right, well, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to be bold. I say the number one seed is LSU. I think I'm sorry, Alabama fans. We'll get to the I'm sorry segments later, along with some Penguins and some Pirates. Just a little preview there. But I think LSU, I think they're just too good with Joe Burrow on offense. And they're dynamic receivers with the defense that they have. This is just a completely
it's a new age of LSU football.
It's an LSU football team with some offense, which has not been seen in a while. So I think LSU is the one seed. I think they go into Alabama. I think they win. I think
that,
they
with
win.
That, with that game being in Death Valley.
I think they win. Well, I believe the game's in. Game's in Tuscaloosa.
It is? Okay.
I think they go on the road and get a key road victory.
I could have swore I heard something about it being in LSU.
No, so I think LSU wins. I think LSU wins the SEC. I think they're too good. I think Alabama stays in the playoffs, though. I think they'll be a four seed.
You can't have a playoff without Alabama.
Yeah, biased opinion. It would be great to see a playoff without Alabama. Just how it is with only four teams. But I think Clemson makes it. I think Clemson's the two. I think Ohio State's the three. I think they win the Big Ten. I think, and the Penn State game, I just think it goes Ohio State's way. Mm-hmm. That's my top four: mm-hmm. LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama.
I like that. I like your picks. I'm gonna agree. I'm gonna say LSU takes number one, and then at number two, I say Clemson's just gonna run the tables undefeated, so they're gonna have to end up staying in there. They're just going to run the table.
Well, I could see...
They're just going to run the table.
I could see Ohio State and Clemson flip-flopping because Ohio State will have better wins under their belt. So I could see Ohio State 2 and Clemson 3.
Okay, in that case. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it depends. If they severely end up beating every other team, and then at 3 will be OSU, and then 4 for summer. I just feel something about this Wisconsin team. This is just one of the better ones. I mean, this is just one of the better teams I think they've seen, that like they have had. I mean, their one bad loss, I mean, they would probably be in the Big Ten championship game to Ohio State. I mean, would that loss completely take them out of the playoff race, or do you think another team would be able to make it in there?
If they are down in a game, I do not have confidence in their passing attack to be able to come back. I just don't. It's all Jonathan Taylor.
They rely a lot on their defense. But for me, my top four picks, but just overall, the Big Ten and the SEC are just clogging this top ten, you know, the rankings. Until this past week, Georgia was in there. But now they're out of the fold.
There should be an 8-team playoff. Just going to throw it out there.
Yeah, we'll discuss that for a little bit in a second. I have LSU. I agree with both of you. LSU is number one. I think they take care of Bama. Bama falls out of it completely. I think they lose to Auburn as well.
Ooh,
so Bama does not make the playoff. I have LSU at one. I have Ohio State because I think they're going to run their table. I think they're going to win the Big Ten championship. I think they have the better wins. They just have the better resume coming in here. If they went out, they're at two. Oklahoma at three. I don't think they have much tough competition
and
left.
And this is one of the best. This is one of the better Oklahoma defenses under Lincoln Riley.
Jalen Hurts, I think, is going to carry this team. And then four, I have Clemson. I think Clemson wins out, but I just don't think they're going to have
record.
Yeah, this is strong enough. They haven't played many tough teams. They don't have many tough teams left. So those are my top four. And then just going off of what you said, I think, yeah, playoff expands to 8. If anything, at least make a little bit, maybe make it 5 and have a 4-5 wild card type thing, sort of how the NFL is. But, yes, I think 8 would obviously be where it heads to because they have the weeks after the championship weekend. They have, like, the 3 weekends before they head into New Year's where they're not playing any – bowl games. They can maybe move bowl games up or put in a playoff game early or something along those lines.
It's dull, and I think with so many good college football teams, so many good Power 5 teams, and as we see, Appalachian State is ranked 24th, but Boise is, I think, 15th.
I mean, if you think about it, there's the New Year's 6. If you make 4 of those games, college football playoff games, there you go.
There you go.
And
why not?
You just play 2 extra weeks after that. You play, you know, semifinals week and then your championship week.
I think 4 to start was a good idea, but I think it's time.
It's time.
Expand to 8.
I mean, it's been discussed for the past 2-3 years, but it's time.
Time to stop discussions and make it happen. Now we'll move on to one of my favorite parts of the show very quickly, the irrelevant fact of the day. We don't have anything, like, from the past, really. It's more likely not going to happen this week because... we have a fact from yesterday. So Luol Deng, congratulations to Luol Deng. We do not talk much basketball. Luol Deng, former Chicago Bull, Miami Heat.
Laker.
Retires with the Bulls. 15 seasons. Congratulations to Luol Deng. But hey, he's not done receiving them paychecks. As you might remember or not, Luol Deng signed a deal a couple years ago with the Lakers.
They still paying him.
Oh, they're still paying him. Luol Deng will be paid $5 million a year for the next 3 years to sit and watch basketball.
To sit and just eat food, watch pop.
Luol Deng, it's $15 million total over the next 3 years.
Play, try, and if you're tall enough, play basketball, kids. You'll make a bunch of money.
Basketball money, again, it's there for the taking. And Luol Deng, not playing anymore, gets to receive it.
We'll make $15 million.
That's your irrelevant fact of the day. There's some basketball today for you on this Friday. So now we'll move into baseball. Baseball starting to wind down. Playoffs unfolding. NLCS is over. ALCS is not. But Nate, we got to give you some credit here. You said it on our baseball show that the Washington Nationals would make the World Series.
And we all laughed at you.
I laughed at you. I didn't think you were right. I did give you the benefit of the doubt, say that they would win the wild card game. I didn't think that they would beat the Dodgers, though. And in a couple miracle finishes, they've gotten to this point.
And they're here.
Hey, I mean, they have a good all-around offense, and their pitching finally came through. You know, Scherzer was bumpy in that wild card game, but did they come through and their starting pitching come through in that?
I mean, they had almost 8 innings of no-hit baseball from Anibal Sanchez.
Anibal Sanchez, then the following game, Scherzer comes in.
And then Strasburg, I mean, he gave up a bunch of hits, but I mean, 12 Ks in 7 innings.
Same with Patrick Corbin. He had a little bit of a rocky start, 4 earned runs, but he as well, 12 Ks. They have guys throwing strikes, and, you know, they're going out and winning them ball games. And their hitting is doing just enough to complement that pitching, and they're winning the games.
I was talking to Austin about this. Wait. Oh, what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought.
But you got to admit,
wait, no, I got it. I mean, we were talking about, like, this is a team riding off a whole bunch of, like,
momentum.
But, like, do you think this rest, like, will just be able to affect that? Do you think this, like, this takes them out of their swing and groove entirely?
I mean,
because this team, in a negative way. I mean, this team is a team that has definitely thrived on emotion, just being, just playing games. Like, they've played what? Played for, like, what, 2 weeks straight?
You're honestly riding offensively off a guy like Juan Soto, who's young, you know, has a lot of emotion when it comes to playing baseball. You're riding off of him. More experienced guys like Zimmerman and Kendrick have stepped up huge for the Nationals.
Kendrick, NLCS MVP.
Yeah, and then you have your guy like Anthony Rendon, where he's been clutch just about all postseason.
He's been, like, almost 400?
Yeah, he's been big for them. But for the Cardinals, a lot of defensive lapses for them. A lot of mistakes that you never see out of the St. Louis Cardinals ever. Unreal. No,
very uncardinal-like series.
I was shocked, you know, when they were going out dropping pop flies, you know, Marcelo Zuna trying to make a nice sliding grab. It's in his glove and he drops it. So
and then the little blooper pop fly. All three of them are right there, and it just drops right in.
Just uncharacteristic. Very uncharacteristic mistakes by the Cardinals leads to their downfall against a team that, you know, is riding the wave right now. You know, coming out of the All-Star break, team that just hasn't really slowed down. You know, faced some struggles in the wild card game versus the Brewers, overcame, and they haven't looked back.
Yeah, Washington basically doing to St. Louis what they did to the Braves. 7 runs in the first inning in game 4 to basically...
And that game was over.
Basically say, goodbye, St. Louis. Thanks for playing. 4-game sweep. Nothing like it. Now, one game that's not going to be a sweep, but could be a gentleman's sweep. Houston Astros playing at the New York Yankees. It's possible. This series, which many people thought would be...
Closer.
7 games, maybe?
Yeah.
Just absolutely being dominated by Houston.
Again, it just shows how good this Houston team is and how they can, again, like you said, dominate any team. So if they win series and go and play the Nationals, good luck. That's going to be a tough series.
First game they got shut out 7-0 at home, which raised a red flag. Zach Greinke was bad. After that, bounced back at home, 3-2 win, 4-1 win in the Bronx, and then 8-3 last night. Just shows what the Astros can do.
two home runs changed the tide of that game. 2 3-run home runs by Springer and Correa. I mean, that's 6 runs on the board just like that.
Yeah, this game, the Yankees hit the long ball, but the Astros have responded well this series in hitting the long ball themselves. You know, that's really carried them so far this series. Springer, Correa, Altuve, all guys that are getting on the board with the dingers. So,
and to get a bunch of people. I mean, Bregman hasn't really had a whole lot of opportunities to do much because they just walk him.
And there's still no one wants to do with there's him. Still a lot of guys up and down the lineup that has been.
Yordan,
Alvarez, and Gurriel, guys.
Josh Reddick, all those guys
haven't been making a whole lot of noise. That are still very dangerous on this.
Yeah, bullpen's been locked down. Ryan Pressly came in a bases loaded situation to help out Greinke, gets 2 key strikeouts. Josh James struggled a little bit, but was able to get out of his inning, only giving up 2 runs. Will Harris, Joe Smith, Roberto Osuna, all clean innings, striking out. Will Harris and Joe Smith both struck out 2. Osuna was clean as well, only giving up 1 walk, no hits. So you look at it, everything's going together right now for the Houston Astros.
It's just they're just a great baseball team.
Who sends Justin Verlander to the mound in Game 5.
Who else would you want on the mound?
Yeah.
It's
very experienced, tough pitcher, going to hit the strike zone and make the Yankees pay.
Is it Verlander and Paxton? Is Paxton pitching?
Justin Verlander will face James Paxton, yes. That is interesting. 7:08 start tonight on FS1. Going to be an interesting game. Houston, will they be going back to the World Series? I sure think they are. I think they're winning the World Series.
Exactly. You basically need perfect baseball for the next 3 games to beat this team.
The 2 guys that the Yankees have been relying on this series that have had the best series out of, you know, all the Yankees hitters that have been good, DJ LeMahieu, 7-for-17, 412, .412 batting average, 412. But no RBIs so far this series. He's a guy that probably needs to, you know, when he's hitting, but no one's getting on base for him. He's hitting the ball. The other guy, though, Gleyber Torres, has 6 RBIs so far this series. He's been one of their better batting guys. But they have a lot of bats that just aren't making a lot of noise. But
they
again,
a bunch of quiet bats.
Again,
I mean, Astros pitchers can do that.
Yes,
too.
Yeah, it's fair enough to say that the Astros pitchers are just going to neutralize whatever you have on the offensive side, and good luck to that.
I'm saying Giancarlo Stanton, get out there and play. Okay, I don't care how much your quad hurts you. This offense needs you. Okay, you got to be put in the middle of this lineup at DH. You got to do something, man. Giancarlo Stanton just not isn't played.
He hasn't played all year. I mean, what's the change in narrative now? He played how many games he played this year?
This is the playoffs.
He only came back like mid September.
It's the playoffs. Come on, you got to play. I mean, seriously, come on.
I mean, I don't even think he was that much of an impact when he was in.
You got to fight through the pain. So that's one thing that's kind of been bothering me with the Yankees. Just you got a bunch of guys, and I didn't like their pitching coming into the playoffs,
and
it's
starting to show now.
And it's been spotty, and CeCe Sabathia, and potentially his last outing. Last night, coming out with a shoulder injury.
You hate to see CeCe
come out in this situation, which might be his last ever game pitching with him retiring at the end of the year. So it's hard to see. It's troubling to see. We wish CeCe all the best. But tonight, Verlander, Paxton, Game 5, gentlemen sweep on the line. Houston Astros hoping to go to the World Series and face the Washington Nationals. So that's for baseball. Now for I'm sorry. Who would like to give their I'm sorry where we say I'm sorry to one player or we have an organization say they are sorry to a certain person? Golbach is raising his hand. Go first.
I would like to say I'm sorry to the varsity girls Baldwin volleyball team. I went to their game, their final home game for all the seniors. I went to go against Bethel Park. Austin told me it would have been an easy victory. I thought it was an easy victory. I go. They lost.
Yeah.
Turns out, StatCast shows it that I'm actually 0-3 in every game that I have attended.
And for those of you that don't know, speaking of Baldwin, we are Baldwin the Bird. We are all 3 of us from Baldwin. So that's the reasoning for our show, and thanks to Golbach.
Thanks to Golbach, my team is 0-3 now. Okay, when Golbach goes to games. Yeah, my beloved Baldwin volleyball team, as you all know, I love my Baldwin volleyball. Golbach is not going to be allowed to go to any playoff games.
Nate.
So.
We going?
No. Golbach is not allowed in the gym. We will make sure that he is escorted out. My I'm sorry goes to James Conner fans. You know, sometimes I doubt James Conner. James Conner, you played good.
You played
good in the first half. You broke a lot of tackles. But you know what tackle you couldn't break? any in the second half because, oh, wait, you were hurt again. James Conner.
He got slammed by Davis. Did
James
you see
Conner,
that?
I am not denying that you had a great first half, but please stop getting hurt. Please do something. Keep your body in.
He had 100 purpose yards.
For God's sake, if Connor's injured and Benny Snell's for some reason gets
we're
injured,
we're going to see some Benny Snell football.
Dante Moncrief's going to have to go in at running back and drop the ball.
Ryan Switzer will have to go into the game and play running back.
No, you know what he's going to do? He's going to go in, take a knee.
All right. He's going to take. So, for my, I'm sorry, I'm heading to the ice for this one. We haven't talked about the Penguins or anything yet, but not Penguins. I'm going to go with the New Jersey Devils, who so far in the season, 1-4-2. So, I'm going to say, I'm sorry, Devils fans, for being such a letdown to start the season. Jack Hughes, your number one pick.
Just got his first point tonight.
Finally got one assist, 1 point on the season in 7 games. Missed a wide-open opportunity, I believe, against the Florida Panthers to score his first career goal. But that team's loaded with a lot of talented players, and they got PK Subban, Wayne Simmons.
Well, again, also
They don't have very good goaltending, but I'm gonna say I'm sorry, Devils fans.
But that team, it's a whole bunch of new pieces. It's like it's just getting the keys to a brand new car, but you don't know how to drive it yet. This team will get they'll get their act together sooner or later.
That was me before I got to learn how to drive my Kia, but we don't have to go there. Speaking of hockey, the Penguins on a roll, 4 wins in a row, 5-2 on the season. 3-2 overtime win over the Colorado Avalanche.
They're still the only remaining team with a regular season. They don't have a regulation loss yet.
Colorado's been a tough team to play against, but Penguins showing their stuff, showing that they're resilient with all these injuries. You know, again, adding Jared McCann to the injured list. Sam Lafferty, though, he's been a guy to step up. I've liked him. Me and Gulvash have talked about him, you know, over the past couple of days and what he's brought to the table for the Pens. So far, 3 goals, 2 assists, 5 points. He's been, you know, he's a big body out there. You know, I believe he can
fight. I didn't know he was that big.
Yeah, he looks bigger on the ice. You know, I'm not too sure what his physique is, but he's a big body. He throws the body sometimes, but he's been a good compliment on that second line to guys like Tanev or whoever they throw out there on that line with, or if, when McCann's
speaking
healthy.
Speaking of Tanev with them, he actually had the game winner. I mean, thank
you.
Yeah,
which Landeskog.
I'd like to say thank you to Gabe Landeskog from
putting that one in. So, Penguins got a little bit lucky in a Wednesday night primetime matchup against the Avalanche featuring McKinnon and Crosby. Touching on Crosby, he is 6th right now in the league in points, 12 points, 4 goals, 8 assists. A beautiful goal against the Avalanche. Unreal.
Another Sidney classic.
You know what it is?
It's whenever someone who everyone said he's just as good or better than Sid. Sid shows him up.
Yeah. Whenever it's the big time game, Sid comes through and, you know, continues to show that he's still sticking around in his prime, that, you know, he's still giving the Pens chances to go out and win, and especially when guys like Gino are down and you have a whole list of injuries. He's been, you know, unbelievably shows his talent. He shows why he's one of the best hockey players in the league. Pens go to play Dallas, who are 1-6-1.
They're not a great team.
That's tonight.
But knowing Pens, we're probably ended up losing this game.
I don't know. Right now,
because again, Dallas. This isn't a bad hockey team.
Yeah.
I mean, they got significantly older, but again, Sagan, Ben, Radulov, Klingberg, Heiskanen, Ben Bishop. I mean, Joe Pavelski, this is a good hockey team. They shouldn't be 1-6-1.
In the NHL, there's not a lot of teams that are just playing out bad besides maybe like the Kings and the Senators and the Wild, you know, to start the season.
But those are teams with a plan.
Yeah, but
no, the Wild don't have a plan.
Hockey's an interesting sport where any game can go either way. That's why Pens, you know, top team right now, could lose. So,
well, the young guys, please stand up. They have, and they have also stepped up, led by Sam Lafferty. So, as Nate said, Penguins host the 1-6-1 Dallas Stars tonight, PPG Paints Arena. Going to be an interesting game to check in on. So we'll move into the predictions, and we will predict who will win this game. I will go first. I think the Pens win 6-2. I think offensive firepower continues. I think Lafferty scores one. I think Dominic Cahoon scores one. And let's throw out there a bold prediction and say Jake Guentzel scores 2 more goals.
Ooh,
Jake Guentzel has been so good. Let's just say, you know, let's continue the streak. Jake Guentzel continues, go off. 6-2, Penguins continue to roll, win 5 in a row.
I think Sid lights the lamp once again. I think they go to a shootout this time. They go a little bit further. Ooh. They win 4-3 in a shootout against Dallas. Ben Bishop, I think, is going to have a pretty decent game for the Stars. But they're not going to be able to stop.
He's a great goaltender.
Stop the offensive firepower that has been present so far this season for the Pens.
I don't know if you're ready for this. This is going to be a defensive battle. I think that the score is going to be 2-1. Actually, it's going to be 3-1. 3-1 Pens. With goals coming from, one goal coming from Lafferty, the empty netter, and then one's going to come from Sid on the power play, and then the other one will come in from Patrick Hornquist in front of the net.
Pretty good right there. Now move on, Pitt, Penn State, WVU. Anybody have any predictions for those games?
I'll hit through them real quick. Pitt, I think, goes into Syracuse. I think they come up with a win. I think it's going to be a little bit more of an offensive game once again, as Pitt saw 2 weeks ago against Duke. I think Pitt comes out on top. You know, a closer game, 27-24, as the past couple times Pitt has played Syracuse, high-scoring affairs. I think it's not as high-scoring, but it's still close. Penn State, Michigan, you know, it's the game to watch. Everybody should be tuning into that, checking that out. I have Penn State in a defensive battle. I have them winning 20-10. Penn State's going to live up to their, you know, their expectations and hype on defense and continue to be one of the top defenses in the nation. And then West Virginia, I think, does not have a chance against Oklahoma. I say Oklahoma takes that one 42-13. Oklahoma, dominant showing on offense. Jalen Hurts, CeeDee Lamb, you know, the running game gets weapons going. I think that's my prediction.
I think Pitt wins. Penn State, big win. WVU, big loss. I just think they don't have really any chance to be able to put up with Oklahoma. I think Lincoln Riley's just too good. I don't, you know, the defense is sometimes struggles, but I think they'll be fine. I think that West Virginia doesn't stand a chance.
And then me, I'm gonna just gonna roll. I say Pitt is able to pull off the win, and then Penn State. I don't know. I feel like Michigan's finally. I think Harbaugh's finally gonna get his signature win as a Michigan head coach, and they're gonna win this game.
At the Whiteout.
Yeah, at the Whiteout. I was just gonna
say. At the Whiteout. He's gonna get his signature win, and then yeah, WVU doesn't stand a chance. It's gonna be an absolute blowout. Sorry, Liam.
All right, who will win the World Series? Predictions number three.
I love a good fairy tale.
Let's say the Astros make it, because no one really comes back from a 3-1 lead unless you're the Cubs on the Indians.
Yeah, and it's the Astros, too. Going to be big upset if they do.
I believe in fairy tales. I believe this is story tale for the Nats. Narrative, they've broken so many narratives this year. Why not break one more and go and win their first World Series?
You know, I was sticking with the Astros for the most part throughout my predictions, but I'm going to stick with my Cinderella's story team. I'm going to say the Nats win this one. I say it goes 6 games.
I'm going to stick with the boring Houston Astros. Oh, them again. They're good. They're here again. I say the Astros win in 5.
Gentlemen sweep.
That's it. All right. Last prediction. We've done this for 2 weeks in a row. Maybe we have to get some background.
Wait,
this time.
Maybe we have to switch it. We switch it up.
Maybe we got to get some background. So we have two different things. Will Bechtold's plans fall through, and will Saturday night's Fright Night plans fall through?
I think.
So let me give a little background right here.
Well, Bechtold's bowling plans won't fall through.
No, Bechtold's bowling plans. So over the last couple of weeks, we have a specific group of friends that we hang out with.
Yes, we have friends.
We have friends, yes. We don't just sit around and do nothing all day.
This is the social segment of the show.
Yes, this is the social segment.
If anybody's still listening to it.
Yes, which should have ended 4 minutes ago. We're just running over time. We have a group of people from Baldwin that we talk to that, you know, sometimes we hang out with, but they're very unpredictable people, and they know that, and sometimes plans fall through all the time. They know exactly who they are, and it is crazy. We don't know even how to describe them, but they're great people. We love hanging out with them. So we'll start with Fright Night. Nate is planning Fright Night. He wants everybody from RMU to go, everybody in our friend group from RMU to go.
Not a chance. It's going to be me and Josh riding solo.
It's not a chance. There's not a chance. There's not a chance they fall through. There's not a chance that they will. That everybody's gonna be able to make it. No way.
So Golbach, you think that? What do you think?
I think they're falling through. No way.
You think they fall through?
I also think
they're falling through.
There's no chance.
Poor Nate is trying to plan something for like the first social event we can all go to,
and
he is just sitting here staring off into the distance
because he's trying to think of what to do.
I'm just thinking that Bechtold could easily go, but he's just gonna sit at home alone.
That would not be the case. But Okay, so Will Bechtold's plans for the third week in a row. Hey, they have not fallen through 2 weeks in a row. First week was good. Second week, not so good, even though plans didn't fall through. Will they fall through? There's no plans even made up this week. Will anything happen this week?
No, nothing's going to happen unless you make it happen.
The plans that he wants to happen aren't going to happen, but whenever, you know, a certain couple guys come over, then they might happen, like Mr. Shields.
I don't think plans are happening. I just don't. I've said that for 3 weeks in a row now, but I just don't think they're happening. All right, we'll move on to the shout-outs. I will go last. I choose to go last.
Okay. I don't think anybody is listening that I know, but I'm going to shout out my boy, Liam Bellin, out in West Virginia. I mean, they're about to get absolutely clapped by Oklahoma, and I'm just going to laugh in his face about it. And also, shout out my fantasy hockey group chat for giving me a bunch of insider trader information that I'm not allowed to discuss on the show.
Oh, interesting. I'm going to stick with the prototypical shout out to mom and dad, throw in my sister's house, the man Rachel Allison, probably will listen to the show because she has her own podcast over at the University of Pittsburgh, and that's that.
Okay, I want to shout out my family. I want to shout them all out, but this is my shout out.
Oh, my God.
Ball and volleyball, we're fine. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay, we're fine. I know we might have to play Moon now, and we might have to play NA. I know. The bracket might be bad. I still have not made my abbreviated bracket that is going to take me an hour and a half to make. We're fine.
Guys, he spends an hour and a half
on
volleyball brackets.
We are going to be fine. We have the best coach. We have the best players. We're going to be fine. Every championship team goes through adversity. This is our path. We're going to be fine. As we have on the back of our shirts, trust the process. We're going to be fine.
All right, Joel Embiid.
We're going to be fine.
You know what happened to Joel Embiid? He was crying.
Yeah,
when they lost.
You know what? We're not the Philadelphia 76ers, okay? We're going to win. It's destiny.
Yes, you are.
It's destiny.
Yes, they are.
That's it.
I'm going to the game.
For another week of us. Here.
Talking about sports
on Baldwin and the Berg. Hey, here's some Berg music for you.
Miami's not going to know what hit him.
That's 2 weeks from now.
That's 2 weeks from now.
Exactly.
Hey, Baldwin volleyball, let's get our bracket. Let's win our games. We might not get a bye. We might not win section, but we could still win Whippeals. Okay, we'll be fine. For Baldwin and the Berg, I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Gulvesh. And he's going to win the whole thing.
Thank you for everything. Baldwin, we're going to win. Trust the process. Have faith.